Welcome to the Wolverine Digest Podcast, the best spot for objective and authentic coverage of Michigan athletics. If you want open dialogue, honest opinions, and in-depth coverage of the Maize and Blue, this is the podcast for you. And now, here's your host, Brandon Brown, joined as always by Chris Breiler.
I'm just going to start by saying go blue.
What is up on a Wednesday night, Mr. Breiler? Good to see ya. 24.
Wait, no. 20. There we go.
There it is. There it is. You got to get that, you know, the flip of being backwards on the camera. 24 days until Michigan kicks off against Colorado State. So that means 17 days or even less, maybe like 15 days or something until the first college football game, because there is a couple of week zero games to pay attention to, some Big Ten flavor, a game over in Ireland. Chris, are you Irish?
Of course I'm part Irish.
Are you? I wasn't sure. I wasn't
Did that
sure.
Sound Irish? I got a little bit of Irish in me. Yeah.
I think it was Jamaican. I don't know.
I love Lucky Charms. I can tell you that.
Anyway, we're getting there. We're getting there. We're getting closer and closer. We're starting to go to some availabilities. Fall camp is about a week in. We're starting to get some reports about what's going on. We've talked to a couple coaches. We talked to a few players. We'll talk to a couple more tomorrow, a couple more on Friday. It's here, dude. I called you today. You and I have been on the phones working a lot of stuff. We got some big things coming. We'll talk about that a little bit more in depth as it gets closer. But we've been, dude, me and you have been in the car. We've been driving here, driving there, pulling this string, pulling that string on the phone. And then, oh, by the way, now we get to talk to Juwan Howard tomorrow. And then there's more football. I'm like, dude, it's here. We're drinking from a fire hose now. It's officially upon us. And I wouldn't have it any other way, because it's way more fun to do all of that than it is to be sitting there in early July just trying to figure out what the hell we should talk about or what kind of articles we should put together. So anyway, I'm excited, dude. 24, like, how fast is 24 days to you? Like, how, like, what does that feel like when you hear the number?
Well, ironically, I was I've been doing the last couple of days. I'm trying to find something that's relevant to that number. Like, what was relevant to the number 25? Well, to me, it was Hassan Haskins, the performance against Ohio State. So trying to find a way to relate the number. And I was like, you know what would be a really funny way to relate 24 is how long it was from when Mel Tucker said he was locked in at Colorado and not interested to the time he took the Michigan State job. So I looked it up. And I come to find out it was only like 8 days. It was really quick from the time the tweet went out to the time he left. So couldn't use that scenario there. So settled on Pollard there for the 24. But dude, it's quick, man. I always go back to when we were talking about 70 some days, how quick that went by.
Yeah.
Now we're in it, man. I mean, we're only really a little over 2 weeks away from our full show schedule returning. Yeah. So
two more weeks of one a week.
Yeah.
So we'll have next Wednesday, we'll have the following Wednesday, and then that following week, it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. Yeah. We're going to do pregame this year. We're going to do postgame like we always have. We'll still do our Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We've got all of our regular segments returning where we'll look at the spreads. We'll look at the prediction stuff. We'll look at Michigan's opponent. We'll try to get a person to come on and talk about the opponent coming. I mean, it's coming, dude. It is coming, and I'm excited, and I can't wait for it to get here. And we are getting closer and closer. Before we get into all that, obviously it's 90% football almost all the time on the pod, but there always is something else to sprinkle in there and talk about. And the first thing is a little bit of hockey news. Chris and I are not hockey guys. We're not going to lie to you. We're not going to tell you that we are. But I actually have dealt with Mel Pearson on a personal level multiple times when I used to be on the radio, and I loved the guy. I really did. Every time I dealt with him, I had a fun time. He's funny. He was successful. He was really good. And he screwed the pooch, man. He did too many things that you just flat out can't do, and he got fired because of it. And now Brandon Nerado's taken over the interim spot. He played at Michigan in the late 2010s, or before 2010, sorry, 2006 to 2009. So he's a young guy. He's been part of the program. He gets it. He understands it. We'll see how he does. He's labeled as the interim right now. But I can't say that it sucks, because Mel Pearson just did too many things that you can't overlook. You know, the COVID protocol, fudging some of that stuff, and, you know, berating people, and maybe an unsatisfactory workplace for some of the female employees. Like, you just can't do shit like that, man. And I would have never guessed that Mel Pearson was that kind of guy. I wouldn't have, because I enjoyed my interactions with him. But if all of those things are true, and you know he's fired now, so you have to assume that they are, you just can't let him fly. You just can't.
Well, I will say that you're right. I don't follow hockey. Don't really know much about Mel in terms of who he is as a person, but ever since this sort of, you know, this scandal was, you know, drummed up and in the media, I have been following him on social media. And the only thing I know about him is he seems extremely unbothered by the fact that he just lost his job. Like it was just, I think he just posted something on Twitter today that was hashtag new profile pic. And it was him golfing at the links. I'm like, dude's just like, he's fine with retirement. Like he's good with it. So yeah, I mean, I don't really know the ins and outs of what happened and what kind of guy he is, but I can confidently say he is quite content with where he is now.
Well, that's weird. Interesting. That might not be the best look a couple days after getting shit canned, but anyway,
it's
there
not
it
the
is.
First thing he's done on social media that was like awkward. Like, hey man, isn't there something going on that, you know, deserves your attention? It's been interesting.
All right. So there's that. I mean, yeah okay. So this, I wasn't going to get too deep into this, but there's a lot of people that thought Michigan hockey's been really, really good over the last few years. But like, that's the floor because they've had one of the greatest collections of collegiate talent like ever. Yeah. And the fact that they got bounced from the Final Four or the Frozen Four and they didn't win anything of real, you know, status under Mel Pearson with those, you know, like four or five first round draft picks on one team, dude. Like, there's a lot of hockey fans who are super, super into it that thought he kind of underperformed based on what he had. He was really good, but based on what he had, didn't quite reach the mountaintop, and some people were a little bit, you know, like they didn't like that. And I think that's reasonable.
There was a point in time in my life where I thought I might be a hockey player. Weren't you trying it out? I mean, you were on the rollerblades, right? You never got on the ice, but
no, we've
so
talked
you never even this. Did the you never even did the parking lot hockey?
Bro, I can't skate at all. Like, I don't know if it's my center of gravity, the long torso.
Well,
dude,
the long torso, like, yeah.
I don't know
if people know that about you. Like, Brandon and I are the same height, but Brandon's waist is like 2 feet lower than mine. His torso
I might even be like
just
a smidge taller than you. And I got into your car the other day and I couldn't reach the pedals. I'm like, I can't touch. How do you drive this thing, dude? And the seat thing, the adjustable seat thing was busted. So I had to like.
It was riding dirty. You were riding dirty.
I had to sink way down to get the leg. Dude, I'll rock like a 36, 24 pant size, you know, you want to throw that out there. Yeah.
So like you need the kids gap length with like the big and tall.
It's an interesting dynamic. It's made for some interesting things over the years, dude. I promise I'm not going to spend a lot of time on my torso here, but this is a hilarious story. I was teaching. This is probably like 2008, 2009, somewhere in there. I had pneumonia. I didn't know I had it, but that's why I went to the doctor. It was in Clemson. So a lot of athletes go to the same place that I went to get checked out. And I had to get x-rays on my lungs because they're trying to figure out what the issue was. The doctor had to do two exposures on my torso because it wouldn't fit in one shot. And he literally said, we usually only have to do that with people 6'6", 6'8". I have a 6'8" man's torso, Chris, and I'm maybe 6 foot, 6'1" on my best day with shoes. Taller.
You're lucky this isn't like the 1920s or 30s, because there would be people trying to like steal you and put you in the circus. Like, it's a good thing, right? Like, this guy, people need to see this guy.
I mean, here it is. You know, I'm sitting on the floor right now. You guys think I'm in a chair. I'm not. I'm sitting Indian style on the floor. This is where I reach up to. No, but it's a funny thing that's come up many, many times over my whole life. And it's just one of those weird things. So anyway, how the hell did we get on that? What were we?
I don't know. But that was, I did not anticipate talking about your torso. All
right.
At all
so
tonight.
Torso. Back seat. We're moving the torso to the back seat. All right.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, we get a chance to talk to Juwan Howard. Not really supposed to put a bunch of that, you know, pre meetup out there, but whatever. I mean, like it's in the morning. We're going to talk to Juwan. I'm a little bit curious to see what that's about. Obviously, it's like, you know, super early in the year for basketball talk, but the basketball team put out their official roster today. There's some, you know, notable things on there. We'll talk to Juwan tomorrow. We'll have a little bit more on basketball after that next week. So don't want to get into it too deep today, but looking forward to that. You know, I expect him to talk about, you know, the transfer guys and what to, you know, I don't know how much he's going to get into, like, you know, how much is Joey Baker going to play? What's Jalen Llewellyn looking like at the point? I don't know if he's going to be able to get into that with us, but interested to see what Juwan Howard has to say about the basketball team tomorrow. So we'll bring a little bit more of that to you next week after we get a chance to talk to him. Chris, we've been at some football availability this week, man. We saw Sharon Moore. We saw Matt Weiss. We saw Mike Morris. We saw Luke Schoonmaker. We saw Ryan Hayes. I want to start with Sharon Moore. I think he's a rising star in the profession. He's climbed the ladder extremely quickly at Michigan. He's now the OC, co-OC with Matt Weiss and offensive line coach. Coached the best unit in the country last year, according to people who matter. And the thing that stuck out to me the most was that he just flat out said Trente Jones is the starter at right tackle, and it's probably not changing. I mean, he was like, that was it. He said Carson Barnhart's playing well, and he's pushing him, but it's Trente Jones, dude. So now you know what your front five is. You've got Ryan Hayes at left tackle, Trevor Keegan at left guard, Olu at center, Zach Zinner at right guard, Trente Jones at right tackle. Thoughts on that front five?
Well, my thought, and we'll get into this later in the show, but it's the best offensive line in the country. Looks like it's even better this year. And you know, you talk about Sharon Moore, who, and we'll have to confirm this, I'm not sure, but I believe he's the most tenured assistant coach on Harbaugh's staff at this point, outside of Jay Harbaugh.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But he's been there for a while now. He's worked his way up through the ranks. Every time you bring him up with one of the players, it's nothing but positivity. And you can tell when some guys are bullshitting and when they genuinely care for and love a coach, and guys love playing for him. And you can tell when you're around him, you can see why that is. So I'm excited, man. I like the fact that it seems like we're getting some substance out of these press conferences. A lot of times, you know, you're not going to get, you know, Harbaugh's going to list off every single player on the roster as a guy who's standing out, but you're not going to get lineups, or you're not going to get position group, depth chart, all that stuff. So a few of those things have leaked out here. There's, you know, I think Mike Morris even maybe let something out the other day in terms of what that defensive line might look like. But in terms of what they look like offensively up front, I'm excited, man. I think that with the running backs they have and what they have at quarterback potentially and all the weapons, like, it all starts up front, and they're solid.
Yeah, I've mentioned this many times. I'm not an offensive line watcher. I don't really know what happened. When I watch a football game, I couldn't tell you anything about what the O-line did until I go back and rewatch it and actually focus. I just don't. I think a lot of people are that way. You watch the quarterbacks. You watch where the ball goes. You watch the big plays. Not a lot of people focus on the O-line. I will go back and watch the offensive line a lot because it's super important, and especially when you've got a really good one like Michigan did last year and they run the ball as well as they did, you kind of have to pay it. Like, how are they doing this? Like, what's working up there? And now this year, I'm even more intrigued by what this offensive line will look like, because while Andrew Vistardis was very, very good there last year, he was a captain. The players, you know, went on and on and on about how important he was to their line, the intelligence that he had up there, the way that
culture.
Yeah, all of it. Just very, very important. I think you could make an argument that Olu is as good or better at just about all of that. Even though he hasn't been at Michigan for 4 years, even though he's working on the culture and fitting in personality-wise, he's a smart dude, right? He went to Virginia. That's a high academic school. He's got 36 starts under his belt, and he's listed as one of the best interior offensive linemen in the country when you look at Pro Football Focus and future draft boards and whatever. He might be the best center in college football. He's in that discussion. He was a Remington finalist. Like, that's that kind of guy. No offense to Andrew Vistardis. He wasn't that guy. He's not a future NFL player. He wasn't on any Remington lists. Olu is. Like, this dude is a bona fide player. And when you hear the other guys talk about him, they use words like beast and stud, and he's perfect. He's been amazing up there. Like, he's going to be so, so good there. Then you've got Trente Jones out on the edge at right tackle. Certainly not as big as Andrew Stuber. Andrew Stuber was somewhere between 6'7", 6'8", 335, 340 pounds. That's a mountain of a man at right tackle. Trente Jones isn't small, but he's a good bit smaller than Andrew Stuber was. He's about 6'4", probably 315. But, dude, he's way more mobile, way more athletic, way more flexible. I mean, you're talking about a guy who threw on the 80 jersey and played some tight end last year and didn't really look out of place. Putting him at right tackle and holding that spot down, which I was surprised that Sherrone Moore was so forthcoming with that information. We just don't get that from the coaches very often. I think when you look at that line with those five guys across the front, they're going to be better than they were last year. I don't think there's any question. You've got the three returners who are a year older, a year stronger, a year smarter, a year wiser. And then you've got Olu, who I think is a definite upgrade over Vistardis, and Trente, who's different than Stuber, but at least as good. I think he will be at least as good, if not better. You give the ball to those two backs behind those five dudes, and I know we want to see him throw it around the yard, but if you can run it as good as they did last year or better, it's going to be really hard to go away from that.
It's true. Yeah. And then I think that's probably what we're going to see for, a good chunk, the first part of the season. And I think the concern was last year, can it work into November, late October, November? And they proved last year that it can at least be good enough to beat Ohio State and win a Big Ten championship. So we'll see what it looks like. But in terms of the excitement surrounding the offensive line and Sherrone Moore's role with that, it's just been incredible to see the growth up front. And I think, they were really, really good last year. The fact that they're, should be much better this year is a testament to him.
Yeah. I mean, he's done a great job. I mean, he played the position. He was really good as a tight ends coach.
Enjoy him while he's here.
Yeah, there's maybe some of that. I mean, but if you we'll see what happens moving forward. He's a co-OC now. Maybe he's the standalone permanent OC at Michigan. That's not a bad gig. You could do a lot worse than that. So we'll see. We will see about what his future holds at the University of Michigan. After we had Sherrone Moore, we had Matt Weiss. I had a few back and forths on Matt Weiss.
Oh, come on, Brandon.
Couple things that I liked. We know he's a smart dude. We know he gets the game of football, and he has been all over the coaching staff in the NFL. He's never been a quarterback's coach before. That's a little bit concerning. And the one thing that hit me the most, Chris, was that he pretty much flat out said, I don't know how to recruit. he didn't say those words, but he's like, yeah, I'm still learning. I'm still figuring this out. I got to do this. And he also did say word for word, recruiting was not anything I did for 15 years. And I was just damn, that's a long time. And I can't get over the fact that you bring a guy to a place like Michigan who has zero recruiting acumen at all at a position like quarterback. And dude, I'm sorry. They miss on CJ Carr. They miss on Dante Moore because of the offense, because of we go back to when early returns were that Dante Moore didn't hear from Matt Weiss for months when he got the job. And I'm just like, how does this happen? So I don't love that. I remember guys like Urban Meyer, Ryan Day, and I know Michigan fans hate those dudes. That's fine. But they win 1,000 games in a row. They're pretty good at what they do. They would talk about hiring assistant coaches that are ace phenomenal recruiters and kind of working on the other stuff later. Dude, you got to have talent in college football to win these days. You got to. And that line about not recruiting for 15 years really kind of, I don't know, man, that just didn't hit me very well. And I know there were a couple things that he said that you were like, wow, man, that was kind of weird for a press conference. It was just I don't know.
Here's what it is. Here's how I feel about it. There's some guys that are just, whether it be in sports or in business or whatever it is you're doing, there's just some people that just, they have this energy about them. And you can tell that they're good recruiters because of that. They walk into a room, they attract attention. People want to be around them. Traditionally, people who are good at that are good at recruiting as well. And I don't doubt that he's extremely bright, that, watching film with him is beyond valuable to these young quarterbacks and kind of, the tutelage that he can provide. But a big component of that job is being able to walk into a living room and sell the program to a kid who doesn't know much about it, who might be out in California, might be down in Florida, doesn't know a damn thing about Michigan, doesn't give a shit about Charles Woodson, doesn't give a shit about the Heisman pose with Desmond. None of that matters to him. And Matt Weiss is the guy who's going to lead that effort with a lot of these quarterbacks, and he's the one selling it. And so, yeah, it is a little bit concerning when you hear I didn't really, didn't do any recruiting for 15 years and I've got to try to figure it out and I'm still learning. It's not the most ideal time to be learning, but at the end of the day, like, he's in that spot, and the people that are working with him, the quarterbacks that are actually there, rave about him. And so, you know, there's also something to the fact that Cade McNamara is there, JJ McCarthy's there. And if you're a young quarterback like Dante Moore, it's going to be a minute unless things completely fall apart and don't go the way expected. I mean, that quarterback position is pretty much locked up for the next 3 years, it feels like.
Yeah. Feels like that. It does feel like that, but you never know what happens.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, big time programs recruit 4- and 5-star quarterbacks year after year. You see it all over the place at the best schools. I mean, Ohio State was stacking up the best quarterbacks in the class for a couple years in a row. I know Quinn Ewers did whatever the hell he did, but like they did win that recruitment. He was there. Now they've got Dylan Raiola in the fold. They have another 5-star guy who was ranked ahead of JJ, Kyle McCord. Like, they've been able to do that. Clemson has been able to bring in big timers year after year. Certainly Alabama has, you know, they've had some hits and misses on the quarterback front, but my point is you can do it. It gets done at big time programs. You get,
well, that's where that other stuff comes into play that we talked about. Sure. Is like, if you know you've got to wait 2 years, but by year three you're going to go out and throw 5,000 yards in an offense that's going to showcase your talent, I would imagine it's a lot easier to play the waiting game. But if you're waiting 2 years and then finally your time comes and you're handing the ball off 45 times a game, you know, I'm sure that also, so it's not just one thing that's contributing to that. It's a whole host of things, but yeah, you would prefer to have somebody in that position that's just rock solid on the recruiting trail. And that's what they do. Yeah. I mean, that's not a knock against Matt Weiss. It's just like, if you couldn't see pictures of who they were and somebody said, just pick one of these guys, and one guy didn't have recruiting experience for 15 years and the other guy's been kicking ass on the recruiting trail for the last 15 years, you're going to go with the guy who's been doing that. That's just the way it is.
Pretty black and white. I mean, there's some things you got to be really good at in that job, and he's not that good at one of them. I mean, like, that's not ideal. I'm really surprised you didn't bring up his physics lesson. I thought that part really
stuck. Well, that did resonate with me. And I think that kind of speaks to probably the way he is, yeah, and the way he looks at the game. And like, the analytical side is, I don't remember exactly how he said it, but he said something like, you know, you're throwing a weighted ball with unweighted deceleration. And it just like something like that. And it stuck out in my mind. I'm like, man, he just like, even the fact that he says that's rattling around in his brain somewhere, it just gives you sort of a window into the way he looks at the game. And I don't doubt for a second that sitting with him and learning with him, like I said, is extremely valuable, but I question how well it works on the recruiting trail. And by his own admission, he needs to brush up on it.
Yeah. The question or the topic at hand was talking about JJ's health, you know, like, how much is JJ doing? Is he 100%? Is he going through everything? And Matt Weiss got into, he's doing all the same stuff. We track and monitor everything. We do understand that throwing a football hard is a weighted throw with an unweighted, you know, then the ball comes out of your hand. So then your hand is empty as you decelerate. That does weird things. So whatever. Okay, that's great. I'm not sure that's really cool stuff to talk about at a press conference or like, and I don't know, you know, do you think he talks about that on recruiting visits? Because I think he might. I think he might. Yeah. It just kind of comes across that he's that kind of dude. And
that's what I was going to say. I didn't feel like it was like I just feel like that's just the way he talks about and understands and conveys the game of football.
That's not exactly uninteresting, but it's like, all right, whatever. So there were a couple things there. I mean, I did like the fact that he talked about JJ being full go. He's, you know, he's taking reps just like Cade. I thought that was pretty forthcoming. They didn't have to say that, and I didn't know if they would, but they gave that to us. And, you know, he did a good job of talking about why they've improved and why it was important to play JJ last year like they did and what that means for this year. I thought all that stuff was great, but there were a couple things in his time at the mic that I wasn't in love with.
Can I say that I am maybe starting to slide into your camp a little bit in terms of my belief about who will be the starter week one. And the only reason I'm starting to move more towards your camp that it might actually be number nine is that routinely we're hearing the best guy will play, the best guy will play. And they're very complimentary of Cade and they're very complimentary of JJ. But, you know, Harbaugh was saying that on the In the Trenches podcast. Sharon Moore was saying it. Matt Weiss was saying it. The best guy will play. And if this is a situation where they're going to sit back and watch two quarterbacks play the game of football over the next, you know, however many weeks until they make a decision, I feel like it's clearly going to be JJ. I just feel like he's the better quarterback, right?
It kind of sounds like
I'm starting to lean more towards that belief.
It kind of sounds like they're foreshadowing a little bit and laying a foundation for why they're making a change. That's how the language sounds.
Yeah,
it really does. When you're beating the drum on this, the best guy will play. That sounds like a change is coming. I don't know. I told you maybe it's been about a week now. I've moved my slider towards number nine. I've moved it over towards number nine. I'm not like going out and saying I guarantee JJ is the starter. But as we sit here today on August 10th, I feel like that's more likely than Cade. I do.
Feels like
I
it.
Feel that way. And neither one of us were saying that two months ago.
My gut still tells me no, but I am wondering, like, they are beating that drum, the best guy will play. And I'm starting to wonder if that is a little bit of what you said. Is that laying the foundation for something that everybody can see, you know? And they're going to be asked that question if they go with JJ, you know, what was it that ultimately swung it in his favor? And all you got to do is go back to what they've been saying all fall, is the best guy will play, you know?
Yeah. Well, we've always said that the best guy was, I mean, that it just plays out that way. And so, yeah, we'll see what that ends up looking like. And, you know, I put up an update. You know, we have a practice observer that gave me some breakdown about, you know, it looks like it's JJ, but that person still thought that Harbaugh was going to go with Cade if the running game was a little bit more established, which I think the running game is completely established, but whatever. I don't know, man. It's going to be really interesting. I said it's going to be, you know, we're going to see them both a lot through the first 3 weeks of the season, maybe even the fourth week against Maryland, and then that Iowa game. You know, that's the big one.
You know what? Right there. And we talked about this and the many miles we've been putting on our vehicle. We talked about what Chase Moeller, I think that's how you say his last name. What he just brought up is if they do keep saying the best guy is going to play and then Cade starts, does it bring up concerns about JJ? And I specifically said that to you. If that's the mindset and that's truly how it's going to be, where the best guy is going to play, I just believe that it's going to be very apparent that it's JJ. And if it's not, at this point, for as long as he's been in the system and from what we could see in the little bit of time he got on the field last year, I'm going to start to ask those questions. What is it specifically that you're seeing from JJ that's preventing him from winning that job? Because in the small instances where he is on the field, he looks incredible. And sure, there's going to be some screw-ups here and there, but guys, he doesn't get a lot of opportunities with the ball. So those things are going to be a hell of a lot more magnified, you know, rather than him taking, you know, 70 snaps on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, there's no other way to break it down that way. If JJ is not the starter this year, then he's just not as good as we all thought he was going to be. That's the only explanation for
it. Or it's fair to start asking questions about what is it specifically about his game that's preventing him.
Because, I just don't believe, because we've seen enough that makes me think he is good enough. He's got to be good enough. How can he not? Look at what he's done. Look at his abilities. Look at his talents.
I mean, I go back to like some of the things, some of the concerns about Brandon Peters. I remember Harbaugh talking about, like, he wasn't vocal in the, you know, in the huddle and had to tell him that he had to speak up. Like, that's not an issue with JJ. I don't see leadership being an issue with JJ. Yeah. Certainly arm talent and athleticism isn't an issue. And so, yeah, at this point, after all the time he's been in the program and just the way his recruitment went, like, this isn't a new thing with JJ. Like, it's been even a couple years before he got here. We kind of, everybody knew that once this kid gets here, like, this is his deal. And so it feels like this is his time. And it feels like this is the type of offense to do it in. Mm. Like, he will have weapons galore. And if you want to give a young guy with not much experience all the confidence in the world going in the second half of the season, let him go sling it to all nine weapons that he has and rack up a ton of confidence and yards and all that other bullshit. Or the flip side is you just run it with Cade nonstop and you still probably end up at 11-0 going
10-2 at work.
So what does it matter? What does it matter?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I wanted to get your take on this and then we'll move on to the segment.
Wait 1 second though. I just want to address Florida. That is my point. Yeah. Brandon Peters was in over his head, but that's my point, is that I can't see JJ having any of those issues. So if you're starting to ask yourself, like, what is it that could be wrong? Why is he not starting? It's certainly not like lack of leadership, you know, inability to be vocal in the huddle. Like, it's none of that.
Yeah.
You've seen it from him.
I wanted to get your take on this because I think you're a nice guy, Chris. I consider myself a nice guy. Matt Kirby is certainly a nice guy. That's why I'm about to throw his comment up here. He says that Cade deserves a better fate. No, he doesn't. Like, you're playing college football at Michigan, bro. Like, you don't get to play just because, like, shucks. Let him. No, yeah. Dude. No, you play the baddest ass dude at every position. I'm sorry. Like, I don't dislike Cade. He's going to go down in history as the first quarterback, you know, to get Michigan to the playoff and to win a Big Ten title in however many years and beat Ohio State. Now, whether his hand, whether he was super active in some of those things, that's a debate you can have. He's still the starting quarterback during last year's run. There's, I mean, that's forever. That's forever going to be in the books. I don't care. I'm sorry. I don't care. I'm not interested in making him feel good. I'm not interested in preserving his feelings. That's not what it's about, man. Like, coaches can get fired on a whim because they don't produce or win or have production at the whatever position they coach. So if you start playing dudes just because you feel like, he might not like it if I put him on the bench, you aren't in the right business, bro. You're just not. It's tough, bro. You got to put the best dude out there. And if it is Cade, it's Cade. But if it's JJ, you don't play Cade for those reasons I just listed, just because you like him or because you think you might be upset if you don't. Like, you cannot get by like that at this level of sports.
Yeah, to me, it's just that's such a, you know, it's an idealistic way of looking at things. Like, sure, yeah, ideally, Cade would be the starter and he'd get the opportunity to play another full season. But the problem is the window in college football is so small and things can change so quickly. And when you have a kid like JJ McCarthy on the sideline and you have the type of offense that you have, you're not going to have that. I had an idea that was coming. I had it.
What? What happened? Now, did you do that?
No, I did not do that. No, Brandon, I didn't do that. Who did that? Who did that? Where did that song come from?
I totally, that was the perfect time to play it then. I've been waiting for that moment.
What the hell was I saying?
Cade and JJ, you love them.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not about, you know, liking or not. Like, that's why we get a lot of shit for, like, what we think about JJ and how we think the whole quarterback battle should go or will go. And it's not a matter of, like, who we like more or who we don't like, even though JJ has been on the pod or at least once or twice we've interviewed him, and Cade has rejected me every single time. That's not what this is about. This is about, I just want the best quarterback out there playing. I want to see Michigan play the best. I want to see them win every single game that they're in. And it doesn't matter to me, like, what the guy did the year before. If the guy behind you is better, that's just the way it is. And it's not in the, it's not like the pros. It's not like take my comment.
I did. People are just blasting. Sorry, Matt. I didn't do that. And I wasn't trying to take a shot at you. I just think that's just not how it can be.
In an ideal world, yes, Cade deserves a better fate. But in reality, if Cade is not the best quarterback on that field, then he shouldn't be the guy out there. And it doesn't matter what happened last year under his leadership. And believe me when I tell you that, regardless of how the other guys feel about Cade personally, if they see JJ out there lighting it up in practice and he's not playing in the games, it's going to create people are going to start to wonder and ask.
It's the biggest question out there. I did a podcast segment with Mike Fitzpatrick this morning. He does the Michigan Man podcast. That was a huge chunk of what we talked about. And last week when Chris and I came up with our three questions, I told him, like, quarterback's off limits. Everybody knows the quarterback thing is the biggest question mark and storyline going into the season. So I mean, dude, we haven't done an episode in months without talking about it, because it's everything. It's everything right now. And there's, I see the comments up there, you know, Jalen Hurts is benched at halftime and, you know, makes way for Tua to come in and play in a national title game.
And there's also this narrative out there that the second string quarterback is always the most popular quarterback in Ann Arbor. And that really, it's true to a certain extent. That speaks to how dry that position has been for a long time. But I don't think there was much debate when, you know, Chad Henne was clearly the starting guy. You know, I don't remember that being the case. And I promise you that if and when JJ takes over the starting job, people aren't going to be clamoring for QB2. Like, this is the guy that was supposed to help take the program over the top. It just so happens that the success came a year earlier than most people anticipated. And now you've got Cade McNamara sitting there saying, well, I helped lead the team to a Big Ten title. And that does count.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's a tricky
hey
spot.
There will be no Chad Henne slander. There will be no Henne slander in the comments here.
It's a tricky spot because the transfer portal now, I mean, guys can leave and play right away somewhere else. I mean, like, neither Cade nor JJ seem like the transfer type of guys, but like, I mean, dude, no, they're not, they don't want to sit there. They want to hold the clipboard. They want to play. And so you wonder, you know, you wonder what that's going to end up looking like. All right.
I mean, think about it. This is the longest he's probably gone, right? JJ's gone without winning a football game, you know, like being the guy. After a while, as much as you love the university you're at, you want to play the game of football. That love probably trumps that.
I'll throw this out there too. I'm just going to do it. I was on the phone with somebody today. Dante Moore has not closed the door entirely on Michigan. If JJ McCarthy's your starter and he throws for 4,000 yards and 35 touchdowns, that's going to get Dante Moore's attention in a massive way. According to the person that I talked to today, Dante Moore has not put any pen to paper when it comes to anything NIL related and Oregon. So he's waiting until he signs his letter of intent. He wants to see what some things look like. Dude, that kid wants to come to Michigan. They've given him reasons not to. And like, that sucks because he just got determined as he's now the number one player in the country, according to SI, in the recruiting department. And he wants to be at Michigan, but he just does not want to come and hand the ball off 50 times. He wants to throw it around the yard, man. Every quarterback with a big arm and has aspirations to play in the NFL is exactly the same way. And that's why I know a lot of people are saying this about Jaden Davis and that, like, I'm sorry, he hasn't committed yet. And I like, if you're Jaden Davis, you're one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Really, really ask yourself, would you want to come and play in the offense that we watched last year at Michigan? I don't know how you can say yes to that question. Winning's cool, but he's got a lot of places he could go and win and also throw for 4,500 yards and be in the Heisman conversation. Like, again, I'm not trying to dump on what Michigan did last year and the way that Cade did it and how they got the wins and what they, you know, what it looked like, but those are just the facts. And, you know, again, Dante Moore is still keeping an eye, keeping an eye on what Michigan is doing. And, you know, there's some work that still needs to be done there. Have heard that Michigan isn't really contacting him that much anymore, which is a mistake. I don't know. This quarterback thing is
no, just skip it. Don't even reference it.
It's really good though. It's really good. It's one of my favorite movies. Oh boy. All right. Chris, you want dude, that's good. But all right, we're not gonna go there. Florida, you can say whatever you want. I'm not gonna pull it up. All right. Chris, you had a segment that you wanted to jump into, and we talked about it while we were driving, and I like it. And so we're going to go through it. We're going to spend
I'll lead it off. I'll guide us through it, and I'll ask you kind of just like we did on the road trip, and we'll walk through it and we'll explain why. And by the end of it, I think we'll get to a place where hopefully by the end of this, Michigan fans are going to feel pretty damn confident about the team that's going to be trotting out on the field in 2022. Do we have any music? Do we have any music?
Say, I mean, like, we could throw some music on it. I mean, this song probably. We can go with our over-under music. It's going to come back once we season, but we can roll with this right now.
That'll be work. Okay, so I'm going to lead us off. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to go through each position group on the offensive side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball. And I'm going to ask Brandon a simple question. Did that position group upgrade, downgrade, or is it pretty much the same as it was last year? So we're going to start on the offensive side of the ball first, Brandon. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's go with the QB room. The QB room 2022 compared to 2021. Do you view it as an upgrade, a downgrade, or a push from last year to this year?
I think the only way that it can be is up. It might not be by a lot. If Cade's the guy again all year, then it's a push at the very least, but he's a year older. He's got Ronnie Bell back. He's got a little bit, maybe an improved offensive line. Really dynamic running backs. Love Hassan Haskins. I like the types of backs that Donovan Edwards and Blake Corum are more. I doubt they score 20 touchdowns like Hassan did, but maybe. But I like those kinds of backs more. We've talked about that before. It's not a knock on Hassan. I just like my running backs to be a little bit more explosive with a little more long speed. Both of those dudes got it. So it's an upgrade. It's got to be. Because if it's JJ, we've talked about what we think of him, what this offense could look like with him. And even if it is Cade, he's a year older. He's got some new weapons. He's got Ronnie Bell back. It's an upgrade. It's got
to
be.
And I think that's what it ultimately boils down to, is they have another year of experience under their belt. Obviously, you have your returning starter. And then you also add a guy like Alex Orji into the quarterback room who looks like he's chiseled out of granite. And there's going to have to be something that he can do on the football field. So I agree with you. We'll go upgrade. So first position group out of the gate, upgrade for Michigan.
Yep.
Dude, all right, let's go to running backs. Last year, we obviously know Hassan Haskins was incredible down the stretch. Blake Corum did his thing. Donovan Edwards got in at times and was spectacular, especially in the passing game. They lose Haskins, but you still have Edwards and you still have Corum. Is it an upgrade, downgrade, or a push?
You just heard what I said. So for me, it's an upgrade. I know that's going to be not everybody's going to agree with that. And a lot of people loved Hassan Haskins. And I loved everything about what he did. The first downs, ran for more first downs than anybody in the country. Never fumbled during his entire Michigan career. Scored 20 touchdowns, went over 1,000 yards. But for my taste, I want game-breaking running backs. And Hassan just isn't that. That's fine. That's fine. He was incredibly productive. He was explosive. I mean, he had the hurdle plays and a couple big runs here and there. But I want my running backs to get into the second level, and instead of it being a 15-yard run, it's a touchdown. And so it's ever so slight, but for me, it is a tiny, tiny upgrade. A year older Blake Corum. He's going to be healthy. Like Donovan Edwards, much more involved. I'm pumped about that
group. I am beside myself with the Hassan Haskins slander that's coming from your torso right now. I am very upset. I'm going to give it a push. And I think Cody Engel said it. I'm of the same mindset. I want to see what it looks like. At worst, it's a push, but I do think it's going to be an upgrade once the season gets going for the reasons you mentioned. I just think both guys are so dynamic. Hassan Haskins was obviously extremely talented. What he did against Ohio State was historic.
Let me ask you something real quick, real fast. Yeah. I see, you know, it's a downgrade. Haskins 5 touchdowns against Ohio State. Sheesh, yeah. How can you – if you give every one of those handoffs to Corum or Edwards, do they not score 5 times? I mean, like, I'm not trying to take away from Hassan.
I don't know. And here's all I can say. Nobody else in the history of that rivalry has done what Hassan Haskins did. So I guess I can confidently say no. I don't think any of the other guys would have last year. Hassan Haskins was just on. He took his game to another level. But I think right now it's a push. I think Donovan Edwards and Blake Corum have the potential to be, and you could hear it from the guys we've spoken with so far, they have the potential to be the best running back duo in the country. There's speed everywhere. They can catch out of the backfield. I mean, this is a dangerous 1-2 combination out of the backfield. So right now I'll give it a push, but I do expect it to be an upgrade. All right, man, we're moving on to the next position group here. Let me get my list back up in front of me. We're going to go wide receivers. I don't think we're going to spend much time on this, but did the wide receiver group, is it an upgrade from last year, a downgrade, or a push?
It's 1,000% an upgrade because they didn't lose anybody. They get a Ronnie Bell back healthy, and apparently he's better than ever. He's like made out of adamantium or something now.
He's made out of that. You remember that cop in Terminator that was like
T-1000.
He's a T-1000.
He's faster. He's stronger. He's quicker in and out of his cuts. Now you add in freak shows, Amarian Walker and Darius Clemens, a year older Roman Wilson, a year older A.J. Henning, a year older Andrell, a year older. I can't even say them all in one breath, dude. There's too many weapons. I wish they could play with 4 footballs at once because there's so many guys. So good that Mike Sainristil, who was pretty effective last year, is now playing corner.
And incredible catches.
It's an upgrade, dude. It's insane. Embarrassment of riches at that position is nuts.
I have nothing to add. It is 100% an upgrade. We've talked about that wide receiver room. They've got too many weapons there. So wide receiver room, clearly an upgrade. We're going to move on to the tight ends. Now, the tight ends, they really haven't added much there, but they do get Eric Aull back, who looks like He's put on maybe about 25 pounds of muscle. And from everything we've heard, it has really taken his game up to the next level. Obviously, Schoonmaker in there as well. Upgrade, push, or downgrade at the tight end position?
You know, it's kind of just by nature of the position, too. I'll call it a push. It's the same two guys, Luke Schoonmaker, Eric Gall, both really, really good. They both do a lot of the same things well. They can both run. They're both big. They're both developing and getting better as blockers. You got to remember, like, Luke Schoonmaker was a dual threat quarterback and a wide receiver in high school, and Eric Gall was pretty much a wide receiver as well. Now they're both seniors. They both north of 250 pounds. They can both push some dudes around. They can both stretch the field up the seams. They both made big time catches. Like, they're a year older, but I feel like they're like, how much better are they really going to be this year than they were? They're really good last year. I just don't know if there's much of an improvement there with those two guys. Like, I'm just calling it a push by default. Like, it's not a knock. That's not saying they didn't work hard or try to improve or try to get better, but it's the same two guys at a position of minimal impact in terms of like making big plays and doing this and doing that. So I'll just call it a push. I think that's the fairest way to do it.
I'm going to go with the slight upgrade for the same reasons we did with the quarterback room, is that they do have another year of experience under their belt. Eric Gall did have, you know, the play against Penn State probably saved Michigan's season. And the fact that he's coming back, his body's in good shape, and everybody seems to be raving about him. I'll give it a slight upgrade, but, you know, we'll see how that translates on the field. But at worst, they're as good as they were last year.
There's no way they're worse. I mean, there's no way they're worse.
And that brings us to the final position group on the offensive side of the ball, and that's that offensive line. And we spent a considerable amount of time talking about it when we brought up Sharon Moore earlier in the show. Brandon, is that offensive line an upgrade, a downgrade, or a push?
It's an upgrade, and I think it's a clear upgrade. You've got Hayes, Keegan Zinner, a year older, a year bigger, a year stronger. You've got Olu, who I think is an upgrade over an incredible guy at the position at center, and Andrew Vastardis. And I think Trente Jones is a push at worst. He's a little smaller, so maybe he, you know, I don't know if he's really going to blow people off the line, maybe like Stuber did sometimes, but he's certainly going to be able to get out in the screen game and do some things in space that Stuber couldn't do. It's an upgrade. I don't think there's any question.
Yeah, no, I agree for all the reasons we talked about, man. I mean, the offensive line is loaded. They've the pieces that they've lost, I think they've at least stayed the same or gotten better in those positions with Olu and Trente Jones. So I'm going to say that's an upgrade as well. And that brings us to, just to recap on the offensive side of the ball, every single position group, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, offensive line, is an upgrade or at worst a push. So they've either improved with every group or they're as good as they were last year. And even in the ones that we call a push, we're leaning towards improvement on that side as well.
I was going to say,
these aren't two slaps here. We're not, you know, this isn't fanboy media here. They have improved.
Dude, I'll be critical when it's necessary, and everybody knows that.
Well, everybody knows that about you, Brandon.
Where you said push, I said upgrade. Where I said push, you said upgrade. So, like, dude, we are bullish on this offense, man. And I think you could go out and find the, you know, someone who hates Michigan, you know, a fan of another program, whatever. There's no way you could say anything other than what we just said. I mean, it's just factual, in my opinion. Based on what they had last year, what they did, and who's back, like, dude, that offense could be scary, scary.
Could be. So we know things are rosy and looking really good. At least, did I say rosy? I know things are looking good on the offense. What is that? Why does that keep popping up?
I don't know, dude. I don't know what that is.
We know that everything's good on the offensive side of the ball, Brandon. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball and see if people are as confident over there. Now, I'll say some of the reports that we've heard the last couple days, you know, the list that came out with Mozzie Smith being number one on it, it might change my thinking a little bit, but let's start with the interior defensive line. Is that an upgrade, a downgrade, or a push from 2021?
This is so close for me, dude. It's so close for me because I think Mozzie Smith is about to murder families. I'm scared of what he might do to people this year. We're going to talk about him by himself here in a little bit.
Yeah.
But you lose Chris Hinton, and I know Chris Hinton wasn't dominant while he was at Michigan, but that's still a big athletic 320-pounder who was about to be a senior and he left. That's noteworthy. You know, maybe if Kenneth Grant is a gift from the football gods and he weighs 350 pounds. Chris Jenkins is a mutant, but we haven't really seen him play a lot. A guy that did play some decent snaps last year, Julius Welschof, is now on the edge. He's down 25 pounds.
And he's also on that list we mentioned about Mazi Smith. I think he's number seven on that list.
So it's by the smallest margins, dude, but it's a tiny, tiny downgrade. Only because it's unproven guys that you hope are going to step up and at least be as serviceable as Chris Hinton was. And again, he wasn't an All-American. But that's a former five-star kid. He's going to play on Sundays. He was a 315-pound athlete in there. You pair a senior Chris Hinton up with a senior Mazi Smith this year, and I think that duo could have been dominant. But now I just think it's a slight downgrade, dude. I don't know. I'm trying not to be unfair to those guys who I do think are going to be good, but I think you've got to go that way right now. Mason, another one we've heard a little bit about.
And that's where, you know, you kind of have to – you got to be realistic about the situation and what they lost. And even though we see a ton of potential in what this defensive line could look like in 2022, the reality is that a lot of it is unproven. And I'll be honest, if it wasn't for the return of Mazi Smith – and spending time around him and some of the things that we've heard about him, especially as of late, I would be confidently in downgrade mode. But because of him, because of the mode he's playing in and the way he's rallying guys around him, I'm going to stick with a downgrade, but it is by a sliver. And I think Mazi Smith, you know, they're not going to have individual standouts, and we've heard that before. This is not like a star-based defense, but I think this front might play better than it played last year.
Let me ask you, let's do it this way. Here's a real quick way to get to a number, something measurable, if we could do it. I mean, these numbers are going to be somewhat arbitrary, but I'm going to ask you to do it this way, Chris. We've done the Madden ratings before, the NCAA Madden, the NCAA ratings for players. What's your overall rating for Mazi Smith in 2021? Last year.
For last year?
2021.
I don't know. I'd probably give him like a 82.
I was going to say 80, so we're going to call it an 81. There you go.
Yeah, low 80s.
What would you have given Chris Hinton last year as a 2021 junior player left early?
Same low 80s, high 70s, maybe.
Would you say it's fair that people were a little higher on Chris Hinton last year than Mazi? I think they were.
Heading into the season, yeah. I know I was.
I'm going to call him 83.
Okay. Fair enough, right.
What would you give Chris Jenkins last year? I know where we're at on him this year. We love him, but try to remember
72, 71. Okay.
Kenneth Grant, true freshman. Wasn't even on the team last year, so what do you give him this year?
Don't know. As of now? Right. I mean, as of now, he's probably, you know, he's down in the 50s. I don't know. He might not even do anything. I don't know.
He's 350 pounds. He's big. He can move, but we have no idea. I don't know if I'd go 50s, but I'm thinking, you know,
I mean, safe, like low 70s?
Highest.
Right, low 70s.
67, 68.
But what are you 70? Basing that on?
Just that he was a pretty big-time recruit. He's big and fast. I mean, you know, I'm thinking back. NCAA, you do your recruiting. Okay. You get a big-time freshman. He's like a 78. That's like the best players on the game when they were freshmen. Like high 70s, low 80s.
Fair.
Kenneth Grant wasn't one of the best defensive tackle recruits in the country. He's damn good. He's big. I'd give him like a 70, maybe a 68. Fine. I'll go 70. Rayshon Benny, can you go any higher than that for him?
For what he would have been last year?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 70, low 70s. Yeah.
68, 70. And now Mason Graham this year.
Same, low 70s.
All right. I think he would be even lower than Kenneth Grant, actually. So,
yeah.
So here's my point. All right. Now Mazi this year.
Well, here's the thing. The first number that came to mind was 97, but then I cooled myself down to myself down to a 94. Now
I would say 90.
Now, okay, well, we're only 4 points
so
off.
We'll go 92. We'll
92. We'll give him a 92. But what about size and athleticism?
What about Chris Jenkins?
I'd put him up in the 80s. I'd put him up in the low 80s, give him like 81, 82.
We'll go 80. We'll go right at the 80 spot. All right. So maybe it ends up being close, because here's what you took an 81 and an 83 Mozzie Smith and Chris Hinton last year, and you're replacing them with a 92 and an 80 Chris Jenkins, potentially. Right. So maybe we're in the same neighborhood.
Yeah. I mean, you could make a case that it's a push. You just don't have really the evidence to back it up.
So I think it's very fair to say a tiny, tiny downgrade.
Slight downgrade. Slight downgrade. Okay, so we're not off. We're not off to the most positive start defensively here. Okay,
I just wanted to get some measurable, tangible stuff on there.
Fair enough. Slight downgrade at the defensive, at interior defensive line. Let's go to the edge rushers. I don't think we're going to spend much time on this. We know Michigan loses Ojabo, Aiden Hutchinson. They've got some talent there. But where are you at on this, Brandon? Downgrade, upgrade, push.
It's a downgrade, man. You lose two first-round pass rushers who accumulated 26 sacks last year. It's a downgrade, man. And I love Jalen Harrell's potential. I love Mike Morris's potential. Taylor Upshaw apparently is maybe the starter. Mike Morris. Sounds let the like cat it. Out of the bag. Uppy might be a starter.
Is that who that is?
That's who that is. But I still, it's a downgrade, man. It's got to be. It's got to be.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too, is, you know, again, you can't be a prisoner of the moment and get caught up in all the potential that Michigan has this upcoming year. The reality is they lost two first round draft picks
yep.
from last year. And I know that, you know, Ojabo slipped, but had it not been for the injury, he would have been a first rounder. So yeah, you have to mark that as a slight downgrade. I think that's a downgrade. I'm not even going to say slight. It's a downgrade. They lost a lot there with the potential for that. I mean, if that's a push by the end of the year, imagine what two guys are going to step up and make that a push. That will be incredible if that's a push at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's a downgrade right now, and it's the biggest one on the team, in my opinion. I don't think that's really much of a debate.
Yep, and that just speaks to how good the guys were.
Yeah, that's really what it is. It's pumping up Hutchinson and Ojabo because they deserve to be pumped up like that. It's not a knock on the guys that are going to be in there, but, dude, that's two first-rounders with 25 sacks, man. That is what it is.
All right, so again, another downgrade. We're two position groups in on the defensive side, both downgrades. Let's go to linebackers. I know they lost Josh Ross, but Junior Colson's going to be back there. Mike Barrett's back there. They've got some guys, Nakai Hill-Green. What do you got at linebacker? Upgrade, downgrade, push?
I think it's a slight upgrade, and it's not really any deeper than the fact that Junior Colson is never going to come off the field. He's a stud. He racked up 60 plus tackles last year, played a lot as a true freshman. He's poised. He's ready. Mike Barrett looks ready to be athletic and make plays out there. If it's a Kai Hill-Green, if it's one of these other younger guys, you know, like Josh Ross was good, but you know, it's not an NFL guy. He's really smart. He was a leader. He was a captain, but in terms of overall production, skill, athleticism, you know, Junior Colson being on the field instead of Josh Ross is a better situation for Michigan's defense. So I'll go upgrade. It's not by a lot. You know, I don't think that position group was super impactful last year. I'm not sure it will be super impactful this year, but if there's a guy who can do it, it's Junior Colson.
Yeah, well, that's where I'm at with it. It's, you know, CJ that, kind look, of hit the nail on the, yep, and you can see it, you know, and Malachi said, also.
That's it. Malachi. Yeah. I love the way he put that. I think that's exactly what I'm trying to say.
And I think that's a fair assessment, but at the end of the day, you got to lean more athletic at that position. And we've been around Junior Colson this summer and the guy is just built like a veteran. And I can't wait to see what he looks like with his pads on. And when he's a full go and able to just sort of, you know, embrace that position fully. So I'm going to go slight upgrade, but it is, you know, you do lose the leadership. You do lose the experience of a guy like Josh Ross. And that does count because I think a lot of that helped Michigan get over the hump last year. So they do lose a little bit with Ross, but man, Junior Colson just looks like he's going to be so good. And we've seen some of it on the field. Slight upgrade
and
linebacker position.
And I will say this. We talked to some players on the defense while we were in Mackinac. And when you've got a guy like Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo, you don't want them to do anything other than rush the passer because they're so good at it. That's their best trait, so you have them do it on pretty much every play. Without those guys, now we might see a Jalen Harrell drop into coverage. Now we might see Taylor Upshaw drop into coverage. You might see Mike Barrett. You might see Junior Colson. You might see Nakai Hill-Green with some more exotic blitzes from the second level. You can start to work in some twists and stunts that free up lanes for the linebackers to fly into the backfield and make plays back there. it's more, it could be potentially more complex, harder for the defense, harder for the offense to recognize, and a little bit more versatile with those two first rounders playing on Sunday. So that makes me wonder how it's going to look. And you do have a new coordinator calling new plays. So I think there's the potential for that linebacker group to be a little bit more involved in the pass rush. And that plays right into Mike Barrett being, you know, a little undersized but fast, quick. Get him in there. Let him fly into the backfield.
Yeah.
A la Jabril Peppers a few years ago. Are we resurrecting the Viper position for Don Brown in his honor? Probably not.
Ooh, but I think that wouldn't go over well.
I think you can see some stuff that looks a little more like that because of what you're able to do up front. So we'll see.
Shoot, if Jesse Minter comes out with a mustache week one, we're in some trouble. All right, Brandon, let's go to safeties. We know that Michigan lost, you know, Brad Hawkins, obviously veteran, a lot of time. Dax Hill, I'll just get right to it. Safeties, upgrade, downgrade, push at that position.
I don't know how you can't say it's a downgrade, man. And I like Dax Hill wasn't like your traditional just stand in the back safety. He was like a nickel guy. They did everything with Daxon Hill, but that's a key part of your secondary who was drafted in the first round by a Super Bowl team. And by all accounts, he's getting a lot of run in the preseason with that defense. That's a really good player, a versatile piece that you can move around all over the place. And you mentioned Brad Hawkins, dude. Whatever you thought about him, he didn't get an interception while he was at Michigan. He wasn't the flashiest. He wasn't the fastest. But, dude, he played in more games than anybody who's ever wore the winged helmet. That's valuable. He was a communicator back there. He was a leader. You lose those two guys. I love R.J. Moten. I love Rod Moore. I still think Mekari Page has something to offer, but it's a downgrade, man. It's got to be.
Yeah, I mean, when you lose that kind of experience and that kind of talent with a guy like Dax Hill, I think you're right on. It's, you know, again, you have to sort of balance it with, like, your enthusiasm of the upcoming season, what could be, with the reality of what was lost, and I think a downgrade is certainly a fair assessment at this point. Lastly, we're going to go to the corners. You know, Michigan loses a guy like Vincent Gray, but Will Johnson is in Ann Arbor, and he looks every bit the part. You got guys like Jamon Green, DJ Turner, you know, DJ Turner going to Big Ten Media Days. Is that an upgrade, a downgrade, or a push at the corner position?
I haven't done this with any other position on the board because I don't think you really can until you see guys play. But I'm gonna call this one a push. I'm high enough on Will Johnson to say, I've never seen him play a snap yet. I still think he's going to be as good as a senior Vincent Gray. I just think he's that good. I think he's going to be that good. I don't know if he's the day one starter. You've got Jamon Green, who's been serviceable. You've got DJ Turner, who's been pretty damn good. And again, yes, he was brought to Big Ten Media Days. That means a little bit. So if it's Jamon Green and DJ Turner starting out at the very first possession of defense on the year, and then you see Will Johnson quite a bit, and before long, Will is unseating one of those veteran guys, then he's really freaking good, and I think he's really freaking good. So I'm going to call it a push. I think it would be a little unfair and a little bit drinking the Kool-Aid to say it's an upgrade, but I think a push is fair.
Now, because I saw it pop up in the comments, where does Mike Sanger still fit into the equation? We talked about the safeties in the corners. Where, I mean, does that factor into, you know, anything that you're thinking about how good this group is going to be?
He didn't come into my head as I was going through my spiel right there, but if anybody says anything other than I don't really know what we can get out of him, I think you're lying. How do you know? He looked good in the spring game. He's getting some run in there. He's probably going to play.
That zero, like, jersey with the visor? I mean, it just looks
clean.
Cold.
It's clean.
It's cold. It's real clear.
I still think push is the fairest way to do this one. Yeah, D2K2, I think Mike Sanger still is, like, that's your prime nickel guy, I think. But
yeah,
I also think Rod Moore can play that nickel spot, so we'll see.
You're going to go push. I am going to go slight upgrade. And the reason I'm going to do that is I think DJ Turner is better. I think you lose a guy like Vincent Gray, who obviously had a lot of experience. But, man, all I've seen from Will Johnson to this point is him running around on the beach with his shirt off playing coverage, and he looked pretty damn good doing it there. I just think Michigan is already slightly better at that position group, and I think by the end of the year, my hope is that it's going to be much better. But I'm willing to give them the slight upgrade at that position.
I forgot to mention. I don't know if this is fair as part of the assessment if we're just going by body in that position group, but I think – I think losing a pass rush like they had last year also makes your cornerbacks a little more vulnerable.
That's true.
So, you know, whereas last year those guys might have only had to cover for 2.5 seconds, this year it might be 3, 3.5, and it gets harder to do, even if you're better.
There's no question that the most fair assessment for that group is push. So you know what? I'll come down to where you are. I'll step down. That's where it is, because again, I even said it, like all I've seen of Will Johnson is him running around. Like I want to give him the advantage, but based on what? Like he hasn't done anything at Michigan yet. So it has to be a push. All right. So that's the last.
I'm not going to pound the table if you think that group's going to be better. When you say Will Johnson,
I want them to be better.
Yeah. Right. They're really good, but I just think that's the fairest way. I do.
All right. So offense, we were every single position group was either an upgrade or a push. On the defensive side, we've got three position groups that are a downgrade. One that's an upgrade at the at linebacker, and then one that's a push at the corners. And so a lot of question marks that we're not sure about.
Yeah.
And a new DC. So still a lot of question marks on the defensive side of the ball, but it's interesting because the excitement about what's going on over there. And I think a lot of it is being led by some of the stuff you're hearing about Mazi Smith, but this defense has the potential to be really very good.
I'll tell you what they're not short on. They're not short on talent. They're not short on young, unproven guys who could be really freaking good. And they're not short on, I was going to say they're not short on depth, but like there's a couple spots where depth is a little dicey. It's not bad. I think you could go through each position group and name like 5 or 6 dudes that you think could play, but I don't know if you can quite call that depth yet, but they've got bodies. I'll say that. They've got dudes there.
Here's what we can't do. We can't forget about perhaps the most important group of the whole deal. Bang! Special teams.
To the moon.
Better, upgrade, or push from 2021 to this year?
I'm calling it a push. You've got Brad Robbins, who's, I think, 41 or 42 years old. Jake Moody. I mean, like, these dudes are, like, you know, they're like 12th year seniors at this point.
I'm not even shitting you. If me and Brad Robbins were just chilling like at a beach with like our hats off and like you would just think it was like a couple of like coworkers hanging out. It was just a couple of buddies. But yet
I'm trying to find it quickly.
Like 20 years older than he is.
I'm trying to find it quickly.
You know what it is? It's the bald. That's what sucks about the baldness, man. It robs you of your youth. You immediately become fully fledged adult.
It robs you.
You're not embracing the full experience of being young when you've got a horseshoe. You're just not. And I know that from living it and experiencing it. What are you searching for down there? I mean, you know, it's just me and Brad Robbins, just a couple of bald guys with facial hair.
Love it.
Stealing all your wives on the beach, really.
Love it. So it's a push. I mean, you've got guys who are, they're physically mature. They've played a ton of football. They've done a lot of things at a high level. They're going to be really good. Being a Brad Robbins and Jake Moody pushing into 2022, there's like 95 teams in the country who would take that today, right now. It's a push.
Yeah. Yeah. That's and I'm there too. It's a push. They're going to be good, but I expect them to be. Look, no, baldness counts. Is that what he's saying? You only give him a 40 for the baldness? No,
baldness equals 40 years old.
Oh, see, no, that's also hurtful. That's all. However you meant it, B-Trey.
How about your hurtful boy real quick?
Look at the fresh face. See, I have the opposite haircut. Woo! It fades out as it goes up.
Aren't you a woo guy now?
Well, yes, but for reasons I can't explain at the moment. But yes, I am. I'm woo guy now. But yeah, so let's just recap so that everybody knows, because I was hoping this segment would help people feel better about the situation. So offense, we're looking good everywhere. Every single position group is either an upgrade or a push. Defense, there's some questions. We've got a few downgrades at some key position groups, interior defensive line, edge rushers in particular. So the defense is going to be a question, but special teams should be solid. Offense should be really, really good. And I think the defense has enough time the first 4 weeks of the season to figure out what they got to figure out.
That's fair. You know, you've got. Did I blow a microphone out on my woo? I sound quieter to myself.
You may have. You may have.
Technical difficulties over here from the levels of excitement we've got going. I think that's a great point. I mean, any wrinkle you can come up with on Michigan's team, they're going to have 3 to 4 weeks to iron it out. Yep. Whether that's the quarterback battle, whether that's, you know, how they're going to use all those wide receivers, whether that's Olu. I mean, you know, I think he's going to be really good. Is it reasonable to say he might just need a game or two to gel? Yeah, certainly it is. Andrew Vistardis was entrenched in that system and that program and his voice. From everything we've heard, Olu has stepped right in, seamless, no problems. But you never know. I still think that O-line is going to be dominant, and it's certainly going to dominate Colorado State, Hawaii, and UConn. But yes, that defense is going to have, you know, that defense is going to have a chance to figure some stuff out. I really think it's going to. Lots of talent, lots of dudes, lots of potential, but you got to see it, man. When you talk about what Michigan lost from last year, I don't think there's any way you can think that the interior defensive line, the edge rushers, or the safeties are better. I just don't. You can't say that.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
We will see. We're pretty much in agreement across the board on that side, too. No
offenses. Offense should be very, 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 very good. Defense should have enough time to work out whatever they got to work out, and special teams will be solid. What that equates to, Brandon, is 11-0 going into Columbus and Michigan. I mean, dude, how crazy is it that we are now living in a reality where we're sitting here saying Michigan should be back in Indy? Michigan should be in the playoffs. That's not bullshit fandom of 2 years ago thinking that things should be a certain way. Like, this is now the standard. This is the level they're at now. And so that should be the expectation.
There you have it.
No,
that's our
position. Michael Wenglikowski. We haven't been to practice yet. We're not allowed to go to practice. It's one of the few markets across the country where the media can't pop in and check out the practice every once in a while. I'm not going to go off on a tangent, but I am going to say – not tonight, but I will say it's pretty shocking to see how much content you guys are robbed of based on the unnecessary red tape that the University of Michigan creates for the media members that cover that program. You guys deserve more content than what you're getting.
There you have it. Position by position breakdown.
Tiny soapbox.
One that we all share. We'll get into that maybe at a later date. Doesn't need to happen tonight, but maybe at some point. All right, we're going to close with this, Chris. For three years in a row, Michigan now has the biggest freak in college football per – is it Bruce Feldman? Who has the freak list? No.
It was Feldman.
Is it Feldman? Okay. If I'm saying the wrong person, I apologize. But 3 years in a row, Michigan now has the biggest freak in college football. 2 years ago, it was Quiddy Pay. Last year, it was Aiden Hutchinson. And this year, it is none other than Mozzie Smith, who Chris and I both think is going to be in his bag this year. I mean, look at this absolute menace. I told you he might literally kill somebody on the field this year. I mean, dude, that's 330-plus pounds of terror. Man.
Yeah.
Absolute terror. Blake Corum is a brick shit house, and Mozzie's throwing him like a small child right there.
Corum looks like a child there. Yes. And we've said this a little bit, maybe not even a little bit. I think it's been a lot at this point, but you know, being in close proximity with him this summer at some of the, you know, the various stops they had at the tour around the state of Michigan, I couldn't stop. That was like one of the primary thoughts in my head all the time was just how much bigger he had gotten. Like it's just so noticeable. His presence is, I've been around him before and it just wasn't like this. Like you can tell that he made a decision and credit, you know, I don't want to take any credit away from him, but I do want to give credit to guys like Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo for laying a foundation for how you can be successful. And we've been sort of looking at, who's the guy defensively that's going to pick that up and run with it? And I'll be honest, I didn't have Mozzie Smith as that guy on the top of my list. And I don't think there's any question between the way he looks and the way Mike Morris talked about him at that presser last night. He said, I'm 10 toes down for Mozzie. Whatever he wants us to do, that's what I'm going to do. It's clear that he is a leader on that defensive front and overall on the team. And that's, it's really cool to see, man.
You know, I got a small taste of it. I didn't know it was going to be so noticeable among his peers and teammates and as a part of this year's defense, but I got a small taste of what kind of eye for detail Mozzie Smith had and how he was able to convey and teach and instruct at that camp we went to in Chicago. Yeah. I remember I came back and I wrote down some observations, and one of the things I wrote down was I couldn't believe how hands-on Mozzie Smith was, yeah, how focused he was on details, and how into it he was. When, I mean, he was jumping in there, he was grabbing kids, he was doing this, he was doing that, he was repositioning them, he was fixing their stance, he was talking about hand play. I mean, dude, he looked like a 10-year veteran defensive line coach, man. And you're talking about a guy who is in the spring, you know, in spring ball of his senior season. And then we heard Mike Morris talk about him last night like he was his D-line coach. That's literally how Mike Morris was talking about Mozzie Smith last night, was like, Mozzie's in charge of getting us right. That's basically how he worded it. Yeah. It was awesome to hear him talk that way.
Should I read through what Feldman had to say, like this paragraph, yeah, just so that, yeah, so the article is, yeah, the article is up on the Facebook page. It's up on the, you know, on the website. You guys can look at it, but I'm going to read through a little bit, and this will put in perspective just what Mozzie Smith is doing from a physical standpoint. So Feldman starts off with this. Smith does 22 reps on the bench press, but that's with 325 pounds, not 225 pounds. So 22 reps of 325. His close grip bench is 550 pounds. His vertical jump is 44 inches. His
His vertical jump is 44 inches, he's an alien. He's an alien.
That is insane.
I have to think that's a typo, dude. If it's not, that's otherworldly.
Right? I'm basing off what was written here.
It's what it says.
Smith, who had 37 tackles last season, clocked a 4.41 shuttle time, which would have tied the best by any defensive tackle at this year's NFL scouting combine, and it would have been better than any defensive tackle weighing 310 pounds or more in the past decade.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know what that was. The plyo, you know, we have the video up in the article.
Yeah.
Aiden Hutchinson, I forgot what his time was, but Mozzie Smith was like 0.2 seconds off from what Aiden Hutchinson was. And Mozzie weighs like another 500 pounds. So
they do 2-footed jumps up 27-inch plyo stairs. I think there's maybe 5. I'm just going off of memory.
Oh, here it is. I have it in front. So it's a series of 7 26-inch high stairs. The team record is 2.21 seconds. Mozzie did it in 2.82 seconds. And as a comparison, Aiden Hutchinson, who's 60 pounds lighter than Mozzie, did 2.5. So Mozzie was a 2.8, Aiden was a 2.5, and Aiden's 60 pounds lighter.
He just got drafted number 2 in the NFL and is right, widely regarded as a freak show when it comes to his burst and his flexibility and all that stuff.
I don't want to put too much out, you know, like too much of an expectation out there, but this guy has the potential to become a first round. I mean, he has the potential to be that guy. It's right there in front of him. And based on what we can see and the way he's locked, I mean, dude, even the way he walks around when he's with the team, it's like his mind is just, it's on football. All he wants to do is dominate. That's it. Yeah.
He is the alpha. He looks like the Hulk. Yes. We've said it on one of the previous episodes, like Eric All stepped off the bus looking like a man, 260 yoked. Let's get it. Two and a half of him was like the width of Mozzie Smith. It was insane watching them walk next to me. Like, he made Eric All look thin and like he needed to eat a sandwich.
You know what it reminds me of a little bit? Like, you see those pictures of like these guys going to Alabama and Clemson. They look like they're built in a lab, and you say, shit, why can't Michigan pull in a guy like that? That's Mozzie Smith right now. If you were to look at that guy walking around, he didn't have any like school affiliation on, you'd be like, that's an SEC defensive lineman right there.
Those linemen that go to Alabama and Georgia look like that when they're 13, but like the point remains. I'm being facetious, but you're right. You're right, dude. Michigan hasn't had a dude that looked like that in a like Rashawn Gary was like that kind of coming out of high school. Like, dude, look at that guy, dude. Look at that guy. And obviously, you know, he still ended up being the number eight pick. I know his sack numbers weren't off the charts at Michigan, but
look at the guys we're comparing him to. Quiddy Pay, Aiden Hutchinson, Rashawn Gary. I mean, these are first round picks, and Mazi Smith is being talked about alongside those guys. And it's just that growth. I mean, the way he's transformed his body and his mind over the last 4 years has been incredible, to the point where, you know, he might end up being a first round pick.
Bag season, dude.
Bag season.
It is bag season for Mazi Smith. Like, if we – I actually had this written down. We didn't get to it. Maybe we'll do it later. But if you had to put, like, you know, 3 to 5 guys who are really chasing their bag this year, really trying to, skyrocket their draft stock or, you know, whatever the case may be, if it's a freshman, if it's a sophomore, junior, senior, obviously they have different things they're going to be playing for. But he's at the top of the list, and it's not close. In terms of like what he looks like, what this year could be, what it could do for him. There's a couple other guys in that mix. I think Ronnie Bell's in that mix. I think Blake Corum is in that mix, you know, going into his third year. But dude, Mazi is up here, dude. He is up here based on how he looks. He's locked in, his mentality, his physical prowess, and what they're gonna need from him in that interior defensive line. Like, scary, dude. He could be. Is there any way he finishes his Michigan career without a sack?
Not a chance.
He doesn't have
Not
one.
A chance.
Yeah.
I don't think he finishes his career with just one sack. I think this is going to be a big year for him. I don't see how is anybody going to stop him, prevent him from doing what he wants to do. Are you going to stop him? I can't stop him.
I got the sense when we were at the jailhouse that he could have gotten out of that Corvette, folded it up, and put it in his pocket if he wanted to take it home. Like, it was watching him get in and out of that thing. I was just like, oh my God, this is comical, dude. This is a comical view right here. He's a big dude, man. It's a big dude. And he's ready to make some plays, man. All right. We're at an hour and 20, man. We need to pack it in, but this is what starts to happen. We're excited. We're going to keep it coming. We'll be back next Wednesday. Really good stuff today, I think. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You know, tap in, man, because we're going to just keep bringing it. It's going to be every week until the season gets here. Take care.